17. Westyke came back to his senses on a small couch in one of the Lockenville Manor's many sitting rooms. Your people made it clear that in exchange for my cooperation, my estate and the surrounding town would be left unharmed, Baroness Naria de Lockenville was saying.
And I hear that. I absolutely hear what you're saying.
The voice belonged to Mr. Slant. Westyke wondered how long he'd been out. Slant hadn't been here.
And you absolutely cooperated fully here. Nobody is doubting that.
I have dead guards, Naria went on, and I have injured peasants, and I have a sister who now knows that I'm working with you and may come after me again. And no, she said as Slant opened his mouth, posting a guard is not going to help me. And you and I both know that none of your people are going to want to ride a body stuck with this. She gestured at the crystal lenses that covered her scarred face. I want what is best for my people and for the Republic, including the Ancients, and in the spirit of that desire, I am giving you a chance to make this right.
Again, I absolutely hear what you're saying, Mr. Slant assured her. And you can be certain that we are taking this quite seriously. Yes, definitely, Westyke added, pushing himself back to his feet.
Naria and Slant looked at him.
While it is embarrassing that a room full of paladins could not manage to apprehend Locke, we are committed to making this right.
Slant blinked, then nodded.
Indeed, yes, exactly. Would you be interested in complimentary tickets to the Festival of Excellence?
At Naria's raised eyebrow, Slant added.
It is one of the foremost events of the year, and...
I have an invitation, Naria said. My family was close friends with Archvoyant Savat. What I would be interested in is tax-protected status for the next 10 years, and a paladin band with no ancient soul inside it. She tapped her lenses. And believe me, I will know if there's one in there, and while I can't guarantee what these lenses would do if it tried to control me, I suspect it would be unpleasant for both of us. Slant put a hand to his chin.
Yes, yes, I can imagine. Now, while I doubt it would heal your, previous injuries... And targeting the energy pulse would be difficult for you yourself.
I will survive, Mr. Slant. Naria smiled, a beautiful smile that lit up her face and made her look delicate and wise at the same time. I always survive. All the most powerful people in the Republic are becoming paladins, and I am nothing if not fashionable.
Allow me to send some messages, Mr. Slant said, smiling delightedly. And while you're doing so, Westyke said, nodding to Naria and Slant, put me on that list. If there's an expectation that I'm to be involved in combat, despite your people's assurances that I was here strictly to observe and monitor, I think it only fair that I have the ability to take care of myself. Oh, no call will be necessary for you, Lord Westyke, Mr. Slant said,
and gestured to a table where a paladin band lay on a velvet cushion.
Oh! Wonderful.
Westyke moved over and looked down at his new weapon.
You already had one without the soul of an ancient inside.
A delicate hand clamped down on the back of Westyke's neck.
Not precisely, said Mr. Slant.
The inside of Locke's sister's airship was glossy black, enclosed like a tree ship, but all crystal and shine. It was built to hold 5 comfortably, or 8 with Locke standing, Bertram sleeping. And Ulilenia perched on Derry's shoulder as a dove. Tern sat in a chair by herself, as far away from everyone else as she could manage. She could still see the little market square, feel the stones under her feet. Hessler was a good man, Locke said off in the distance. And we will give him the mourning he deserves when we can. For now. Tern had just stood there, like an idiot, just standing with the ogre's shadow-touched hand over her heart, doing nothing. Making Hessler save her, making him leave himself unguarded.
We're supposed to create an illusion of the glimmering folk coming through the gate if we don't have an illusionist, Kael asked.
Desidora, what if the crystals have memories of... Locke said with some other stuff, and Desidora nodded hesitantly. He had looked so proud. Gods, he'd felt so guilty after she'd been shot on the last job. He had wanted to protect her, and hadn't she just given him the chance... The stupid girl who was too clumsy to dance and too flighty to deal with the family business. There must have been some kind of alchemy that would have stopped the troll. The right sort of silver or Yves Kaffer or blessing or something.
That wouldn't have forced Hand to stand there watching him shrink in the coils, the little sparkling motes of light all around him, wondering when he stopped being Hessler and started being Hessler's corpse.
"Need to split up on the ground," Locke said. "Kale and I will enter, as we discussed. We need alternatives to get Tern into."
She hadn't been able to see his eyes. She just stood there. Derry had yelled, and the paladin puppeteer had hit the ground. He'd been fighting. He'd been too far away.
"With Ululenia's help, I can get Tern into the processing chamber," Icy said. "Ropes down the side of the mountain, good."
"Where were you?" It came out louder than Tern had meant. She'd thought her throat would be dry and it would come out hoarse, but it piped up and bounced off the planed crystal walls of the black ship, and the echoes seemed to grow louder instead of quieter, until the whole room was silent.
"I was down, Tern. I'm sorry."
Icy stood and moved toward her.
"No, you were back up after Derry came in to help you. You were there."
"Tern," Locke started.
"You were there. You could have helped him."
"Miss Tern," Derry said softly,
"I know it hurts."
"Like hell you do. Your dragon isn't dead, right?"
Tern's voice was getting sharper and louder, and she couldn't stop it.
"You're so sure that the guy you love is alive, but I watched mine die, and it wasn't an illusion, because he would have sent a message. He would have done his whisper trick in my ear. He would have done something," she said, and her voice caught. "But he didn't, and so I don't get to lie to myself that he'll be back. Sucks to be me."
Derry stepped back and ducked his head. Ululenia, still perched on his shoulder, leaned against him. Tern didn't care.
"I was down," Icy said.
Something caught in Tern's throat, and she swallowed it down, ignoring the burn.
"You were down because you didn't fight back. The puppeteer beat you, and it's not because you couldn't take him. Unstoppable deferential fist."
Her eyes were burning now, and Desidora started to get up, and Tern stopped her with a look.
"You could have saved him, but you didn't."
Icy sat back down.
"I was the master of the Order of the Still Valley," he said. "I was young, but my master died fighting the Republic, and I'd taken his place. It was after that war, before the one Locke and Kale served in. I remembered my master proudly, and I led the temple where we trained with fire in my heart. I was a very, very good warrior. At this time, the Republic airships performed flight exercises near the border. Imperial airships performed in parallel. Sometimes they fired the flame cannons near one another. The shots were meant as warnings, never intended to strike the other airships. In this, they were successful."
Icy shut his eyes.
"But they did, in fact, strike a small village near the border, unmarked on the maps. The Imperial citizens who lived there had been told it would be safer to leave, but offered no assistance, and given no new land, they had stayed. The fire killed several of them. My wife, whom I loved. My children, whom I had not spent enough time with, because I was too busy proving myself a worthy successor to my master."
He looked at Tern now.
"I took my students, the Order of the Still Valley, across the Republic border. We entered Fort Goye, where the airship that had fired was docked. It was not difficult. You have seen what I can do. Your soldiers were not ready for us."
His gaze moved to Locke and Kale.
"We killed everyone who wore a uniform."
"The Red Trail Massacre," Locke said.
"We never heard about the fire," Kale said.
"I am unsurprised that the Republic ignored that aspect of the story."
Icy bowed his head.
"I told my students that it was justice, not murder, that we were better, because we had not killed civilians. Such justifications rang increasingly hollow as the Republic and the Empire veered toward war as a result of our actions. I could have stayed, held true to my anger. The Empire would have either gone to war or handed me over as a criminal."
He swallowed.
"My students would have been handed over as well, however, and when I saw that potential, the two countries did not wish to go to war. Neither was ready at that time. Leaving the Order allowed for assurances that quiet corrections had been made."
Tern swallowed, nodded, wiped at her eyes.
"And coming here, swearing your oath?"
Icy met her gaze again.
"I wish to see the people whose soldiers I had murdered. I thought I could atone.
He started to speak, stopped, and when he did again, his voice caught.
I was downturn. I did not want to be a murderer again, and I did not fight, and so I fell. I could not have saved him.
He reached out slowly with one hand.
Neither could you.
She said nothing, but she took the hand and held it tight while hot tears slid down her face again in the silent ship.
Pathetic, Mr. Skinner said, as he held his paladin band over the ogre's throat. Pitiful. I should give her claws or blood that erupts into flame when she bleeds. Perhaps then you lot might be useful.
They were in the woods at the edge of the town, protected by other paladins, standard mid-level men who did the work that people like Mr. Skinner didn't have time for. The scorpion was unharmed, while the troll moaned softly, her burned skin peeling off in hunks.
Arika Yorichi gave you this chance to redeem your cursed bloodline, Mr. Skinner said, shaking his head. And you waste it with this weakness.
Effort, the scorpion said. Unprepared.
Weak, Skinner said. You could have used your poison. The troll could have finished off the little alchemist.
Burning,
the scorpion said.
Injured.
Mr. Skinner brought his band close to the ogre's skin, and the throat pulled taut. For a moment, it looked as though it might heal. Then a few little crystals bubbled out from the skin, tearing the wound even wider. With a little smile, Mr. Skinner plucked the crystals free, wiping the blood from his pants as the ogre shuddered and then went still.
Poor little thing, Mr. Skinner said, and turned to the troll. Now you, what to do with you?
The troll said nothing.
Smart girl.
Mr. Skinner brought his band close to her, and the troll's flesh took on a glossy sheen, like the glint of sunlight on metal.
There you go, fireproof now. The burning feeling should fade in a moment as well.
Thank you.
She sat up and pulled herself into her human shape, or at least tried to.
Oh, yes, the skin doesn't catch the way it used to, Mr. Skinner added,
as the troll's upper body flopped over, slithering bonelessly to the ground.
The price of your new fire immunity shouldn't stop you from tracking down your targets, but you won't be impersonating a person any time soon.
No,
she said, her loose arms flopping and jerking like a pile of snakes. Her voice was strange. Mr. Skinner realized she was trying to cry, but her tear ducts didn't work.
Please!
You want to be a pretty elf, Mr. Skinner asked. Or a nice, sturdy dwarf, or even a human, like your people were before the glimmering folk perverted you into the horrible beast you are now.
He held up his paladin band.
Get your targets.
He left the trackers to recover and entered the Lockenville estate. He'd been told there was one more for him to deal with. The elf had dragged himself up onto a platform in the water garden. Mr. Skinner sniffed disdainfully at the dead fish as he passed the paladins guarding him. The elf had a great, nasty wound in his chest. It would have killed a human, but the ancients had moved the elven heart over to make room for crystals that had replaced some of the less important glands.
Another failure, Mr. Skinner said, looking down. You little folks were always better doing the precision work than the manual labor.
I can help you,
the elf said, coughing the words out.
Now.
Mr. Skinner smiled a friendly smile.
You gave us the dragon and you told us where Locke would be. You've served your master as well.
I can make rings,
the elf coughed again.
Easier than bands. Cheaper. Can make more.
Mr. Skinner chuckled.
Now why, little elf, would we want to do that?
He knelt down beside the elf and held his hand.
You make rings, and the price of the paladin bands goes down, and all of a sudden it's not just the best and the brightest wearing them. You think we want anyone getting one of us? You think we want to ride merchants and bakers and peasants?
He patted the elf's shoulder.
No, little fellow, we're fine as we are. And you can just rest easy now.
Mr. Skinner slit the elf's throat gently. He'd always been squeamish about watching animals suffer. The day of the Republic Festival of Excellence dawned warm and clear, with fluffy white clouds joining the airships in the sky over Sunrise Canyon. Princess Veiled Lightning watched the canyon as her airship approached. Even in the morning light, it gleamed with its own red radiance. From a distance, the valley looked like nothing so much as a wound upon the land.